where a nation wants to start a war and doesn't have just pretext, it might use a false flag in order to generate the justification so that that war could be considered a just war. In some sense, irrespective of what one might believe about the 9/11 event or otherwise, one can view world history as like a timeline which then went and was constrained, like an eggshell timer, through the 9/11 event, and then all history in the world after that flows from that 9/11 event. The 9/11 event has actually launched the Third World War, and it's a total war across the whole planet, and the war is against something called terrorism.
Hi, this is Bruce Lipton, and you're listening to Green Planet FM.
Kia ora, greetings, and welcome to Green Planet FM 104.6. I'm Tim Lynch, and I trust that you are doing well. I invite you to stay with me over the next hour as we discuss and find ways to take care of our unique and magnificent green planet Earth.
Kia ora, and welcome. I'm Lisa Eyre, and this is Green Planet FM. Now, today I have in the studio Greg Jeshnevetsky, also known as Greg Fullmoon, and he's going to be talking about the conflicting narrative about 9/11, because we hear many stories. So I think that we can really explore what happened, what is the truth, because there's many things out there. So I think you're in for a very fascinating hour. Welcome, Greg.
G'day, Lisa. Thank you. And g'day to all those people out there that are having a wee listen. And hopefully we can, A, engage you, and B, give you some insight.
Well, Greg, why did 9/11 happen?
Well, that's a very good question. You'd have to ask the people that did it, wouldn't you?
Well, that's going to be difficult.
Not really. They're still alive.
Okay. So, keep going.
Well, the people that were supposed to have done it, like the 19 mostly Saudi Arabian alleged hijackers, about half of them are still alive, which calls into question who it was that was supposed to have done the deed.
Well, it certainly does. So you're suggesting that perhaps it wasn't the Saudi Arabians?
I find it incredibly difficult to believe the official story, and bearing in mind that the event happened on the 11th of September 2001, it was actually the 12th of September for New Zealanders, because the first so-called plane happened at 8:46 in the morning, which was 12:46 New Zealand time. But from there, the US government quickly jumped in and said that it was Osama bin Laden and a terrorist event. They made up their mind by the end of that day, and within days they were planning an attack on Afghanistan as part of their, if you like, retribution against Osama bin Laden.
And that New Zealand then joined in?
New Zealand came quickly to the party as one of the, if you like, allies with the US. We weren't any longer in ANZUS, but we were still a close ally of the West. And it was actually acting Prime Minister at the time, Jim Anderton, who made an address to Parliament and indicated that it was a biggie and that New Zealand would be joining the fray.
So New Zealand has accepted the official story around 9/11, the New Zealand government has?
As far as I'm aware, the New Zealand government hasn't questioned what happened at all. It's just gone along like a puppet and played its role as one of the coalition of the willing in respect to the Afghanistan war. But I think it might be important to go back and have a look at where the world was at the turn of the millennium, so that we can like place the 9/11 event in a more correct or proper context. And the world in the latter part of the 20th century was going towards less and less warfare. there was a greater effort to try and bring to conclusion a number of large problems that were facing the world. The climate change issue, for instance, was being addressed through the Kyoto protocols, albeit the US, Australia and Canada stuffed that up, okay? But the rest of the world was moving and was agreeing that we needed to do something about climate change, and that the West had, if you like, an unfair advantage in terms of its development versus the developing world. And so the Kyoto protocols required that there be transfers of technology and monies to the developing world, and also a period to allow them to catch up development-wise, while the Western world or the developed world was going to slow down and start taking cutting in a serious way carbon emissions. That was stuffed up.
So the world was actually in quite a good situation until then?
No, because we'd already overshot our carbon budget, or it was on track. Mm. And there's still all sorts of wars and war-making going on around the place. We've still suffered massive malnutrition in some places in the world. So, you know, inequality was a major problem, and inequality amongst nations is a major problem. But the mood of the world seemed to be towards settling some of those. And that came out, if you like, or was more formally expressed between the nations through the UN Millennium Development Goals. So there was 15 or so goals, which was going to be the UN's agenda between 2000 and 2015, and they've subsequently been placed with a new set going out to 2030. And those Millennium Goals were about reducing poverty or eliminating it and a number of other things. So the indications were towards some sort of general settlement. But one of the things that we've noticed is that the economies of the world, or the economy of the world, seems to be much more vibrant. There's more growth, etc., when there's crises on. Okay, because all of a sudden governments are forced into spending money in order to avert the crisis or to fix whatever the problem is, i.e. the Christchurch earthquake, right? If the Christchurch earthquake hadn't happened, then there would have been a whole lot of money that didn't need to be spent rebuilding Christchurch. So the crisis brought about a huge expenditure of monies. The crisis that's, if you like, marked the start of the new century or the new millennium was the 9/11 event. And if we look at the outcome of that now, 16 years down the track, there are various assessments about how much has been spent in the post 9/11 wars and in homeland security and all the rest of it. And those numbers go out to $6
trillion. Wow, $6
trillion
from fighting terrorism.
Yeah, in the post 9/11 wars.
Yes.
And terrorism, that word, is a generic word, and anyone who terrorises another is a terrorist. Now, the difference, or the way that the word's used now, is to target a particular form of terrorism, which is generally associated with an Islamist.
Yes.
Right? And it's usually a terrorist event by an Islamist against other Islamic people or against the West in some way or another, okay? But it's not very often regarded that when a nation, i.e. the US, attacks another nation, i.e. Vietnam, and kills 1 million or 2 million people over an extended period of time, that's not regarded as terrorism. That's regarded as just war.
Or even the Las Vegas situation hasn't really been labelled as terrorism, has it?
No, well, they don't quite know what to call that.
Anyway, I won't take you down that track, because
there's a whole lot
of interesting situations, and many people call these sorts of things false flags.
Mm.
So would you call 9/11 a false flag? And what is a false flag?
Yeah, well, maybe it's better to go to what a false flag is. Okay, so an event is an event, and if the event is promoted in a way that is false, then we might say that that's synthetic, okay, or not as it seems. And specifically where an event is created to give the appearance that a group or some subversive element has undertaken an event which involves terrorism, generally, like against assets or against people, and that event is not by the people that the authority is saying it is, then that is false. And flags are very prominent in the military, so when someone flags something false, that could be used to get a particular outcome. If someone wanted to heighten the terrorism alert level or create a crisis, they may create an event in order to get people to move in a particular direction, so prompt history or alter things.
Well, one of the things started the Vietnam War, seeing you mentioned it, was an attack on a ship, which actually was a false flag, has been proved to be a false flag now, hasn't it?
Yeah, well, that's called the Gulf of Tonkin event, and that's been officially expressed by the CIA and others as an event that never happened.
Yes.
Totally manufactured. And that was the event or the moment in time that the US used as justification for launching the Vietnam War proper.
And so that, to me, is quite an important thing, that that's now accepted that that was the case in order to launch the Vietnam War. Or what did they then do with 9/11?
Okay, so, but before we even go there, there's maybe, like, let's just have a look. To launch a war against another nation is a crime.
Yes.
Right? In any case, right, excepting in the case of self-defense, right? So a nation has a right to defend itself against aggression from another, but not a right to launch aggression against another nation. So it's just the same as an individual versus another individual. I've got a right to protect myself if you're attacking me, and you've got a right to protect yourself if you're being attacked, and use reasonable force. Okay, the same nation to nation, so, you know, sovereign nation to sovereign nation. But where a nation wants to start a war and doesn't have just pretext, it might use a false flag in order to generate the justification so that that war could be considered a just war.
Right.
Okay, now in the case of the 9/11 event, right, it was argued that it was Islamic terrorism and that it was Osama bin Laden that did the event. And then that was used as pretext to then launch a war of aggression on Afghanistan to extract Osama bin Laden. And that started less than a month after the 9/11 event on about the 7th of October. Now, the interesting thing in all of that is never has Osama bin Laden been officially wanted by the FBI for the 9/11 event.
Right.
He was wanted for other events, including the bombing of the US Cole, but he wasn't wanted for the 9/11 event. Okay. It's also interesting, in the immediate aftermath of the 9/11 event, there was a series of videos that came out, often supplied by the CIA or American authorities, which showed Osama bin Laden in various, like, addresses, videos, and the character of Osama bin Laden seemed to be putting on weight and getting younger in each of the videos. Now, some of those have actually been proven subsequently to be false. The other thing that people ought to have some knowledge of is the fact that Osama bin Laden apparently was a sick man with kidney failure or renal failure and needed to be on dialysis.
So he couldn't go and live in the cave?
Well, it was very difficult for him to be, like, on dialysis and being in a cave in Afghanistan, in Tora Bora, or wherever he was alleged to have been. He's a bit of a ninja, you know, by all accounts. You know, he could be just about anywhere. So, but, like, you got the world's most effective military all over the place. It's very hard to see that he would have got his dialysis treatment and lived to 2010 or 11 when the SEAL team supposedly knocked him off in Islamabad. But that's a whole nother story.
Whole nother story. Well, look, let's go back to 9/11 and just have a look at, for those people that might have forgotten because it hasn't been relevant to them, or to those people that were a bit too young to remember it all, let's just have a quick look at the timeline on what happened on 9/11 and the timeline.
With the event on the day, for people in the States, planes took off, the first couple from Logan Airport, and they flew, apparently were hijacked, and Flight 11 is alleged to have smashed into the upper floors of World Trade Center Tower number 1, or the North Tower, at about 8:46 in the morning. Okay. Now, there wasn't any video footage of that plane smashing into the towers until a few days later, so it was just a big explosion for most people that had any awareness of it. Some 15 minutes later, another plane, which is now alleged to be Flight 175, smashed into the South Tower, and there's quite a few videos of that. One video is the CNN video, right, which was supplied by CNN a little bit later on during the day. In that video, you can see the plane sweeping in and then smashing into the tower. So you're looking at it as it smashes into the tower. Now, the aluminium plane, as it's heading towards the plane, you can see the left wing of the plane goes behind a building, which is behind the behind the World Trade Center South Tower. So it's almost, it has to be that that video is a false video for a start, just on the basis of that one little skerrick of evidence.
Yes, I've seen that.
It's just in one frame, okay?
Yes.
And then secondly, that plane, like when that plane disappears into the building hole and there's no explosion of bits until after the plane's gone in, and then there's the explosion.
So we'll come back to this because there's many people do say that there were no planes, but we're just going on the timeline. So after the planes are alleged to have hit the North Tower and the Second Tower, what was the next thing that happened on that day?
Okay, so there was two more planes that were alleged to have been hijacked, and one of those allegedly smashed into the Pentagon. The Pentagon smash is one of the most difficult to believe because there wasn't any evidence of a plane in front of the Pentagon in the area where it was smashed into, and this is alleged to be flight. There wasn't any evidence of plane bits that could be attributed to that plane in front of the Pentagon or even within the Pentagon. And the damage to the Pentagon initially was, aside from burning and scorch marks, was a neat punctured hole about 16 foot across, which went into the building, and we subsequently find out there was a punch-out hole between the C and D rings, right? So the Pentagon's a series of, it's a pentagon with a series of rings, concentric rings, and so there was a punch in as it went in, and then a punch out, okay? Now, if anyone's ever looked at plane crashes, generally you see a whole smashed up plane scattered all over the ground or scattered around the building and whatever, but bits and pieces everywhere. It's just a mess. Like, it's hard to imagine a plane as being a solid object which is going to pierce a hardened structure. And we have to recall that that area of the Pentagon had just finished a renovation and had been particularly hardened.
And there was a cafe there called Ground Zero, wasn't there?
Yeah, right in the centre of the Pentagon, yeah. The reason it'd be called Ground Zero is Pentagon is the heart of the American military establishment and control, and it would obviously be number one target for the Russians during the Cold War if there was a nuclear exchange, and that's why that area was referred to as Ground Zero.
I see. Yeah. And, of course, where the Twin Towers were was referred to as Ground Zero
only
as well.
Only after the event, or at the time of the event and afterwards.
And I'm interested, but I'll talk to you after this about it, but I'm interested in the term Ground Zero because that actually means where there's been a nuclear explosion. But let's continue on with the story of the day.
Yeah.
What happened after the Pentagon?
At the Pentagon strike was about 9:30 in the morning, 9:37, although there's some dispute about the actual time that the strike took place. And it wasn't until about 20 or 30 minutes later that the section of the Pentagon where the plane is alleged to have crashed, that section of the roof collapsed. Okay, so there was a penetration into the building which was punched out a hole, and there was a blast there, and that's where we can see that because we've subsequently seen stills from a video of a flash. But it wasn't until like a good 30 minutes later that section then collapsed down. Right, and then we see the roof sort of down on a 45-degree angle. And then the next thing was there was a fourth plane called Flight 93, which is alleged to have been hijacked. It wasn't going to reach its target. There's a story out that the crew or people on the plane were discussing with people on the ground what they were doing, and they rushed the cockpit, and the so-called hijackers then decided to drive the plane down into the ground rather than whatever else, allowing themselves to be overpowered. The problem we have is that, again, we've got a plane accident, i.e. 93 into the ground at Shanksville, but there's no plane bits where the plane went down.
However, is there at Shanksville then? Why do they think it crashed there?
Well, they're saying that was the spot, right? X marks the spot. There was a hole in the ground and there was a big explosion. But there was plane bits scattered further away and across Indian Lake, which was nearby. And those plane bits were scattered over about a 8-kilometre spread. And the forensics on that suggest that plane was actually shot down in mid-flight and then scattered, like blown up in flight and scattered. So that directly contradicts what the official story is.
It certainly does.
Yeah.
How many people altogether died at 9/11?
Around about 3,000.
And that includes all the people on the planes?
Yeah.
Right.
Just short of 3,000, according to the official figures.
So if this is a false flag, it's pretty shattering, isn't it, that the American government would actually allow that to happen to 3,000 of their citizens?
Well, then, I'm not sure that it's the American government that did it.
Right.
I mean, the American government is a big thing. That'd be like the New Zealand government. Like, what part of the government might have said, let's have this happen? It might be an easier jump to consider that there's certain key people who are in on a conspiracy, and they hoodwinked or foxed or punked the government.
Right.
But there was enough, if you like, establishment characters who were involved or didn't want it out that the government got punked, right? And so they covered it up.
So George Bush Jr., who was the president at the time, was reading stories to primary school children at the time.
It doesn't really matter whether George Bush Jr. knew about what was going on or not.
But what did the officials say? What did they say about it?
Well, they let him know that there's been an attack in New York, but then he continued on talking to the kids. Like, there wasn't much reaction from him.
Right.
One could say, well, he might have had prior warning, but I mean, I don't think it matters very much whether he knew or not. Right. The thing is that what happened from then on.
So what's inconsistent and requires further investigation? It sounds like there's a lot from what you've said so far.
Well, the first thing is like, even if there was two planes that crashed into the World Trade Center towers in New York, even if there was, okay? So there's two large towers, each weighed between 500,000 and 600,000 tonnes. And you've got a 170-ton plane made out of mostly aluminium or lightweight materials, and that crashes into a 500,000-ton object, and that causes the catastrophic collapse of that building. And that's just not going to happen in real life. And not only was the two main World Trade Center towers, number one and number two, destroyed, but every other building on the World Trade Center complex, and there were seven buildings altogether, were destroyed.
So and number like seven went down that day, didn't it?
At 5:20 in the afternoon.
Yes. And yet it hadn't been hit.
It hadn't been hit by any, it hadn't been hit by planes, but neither had Building 3, nor Building 4, nor Building 5, nor Building 6.
They came down later?
The Marriott Hotel, which is Building 3, is destroyed at the time of the destruction of World Trade Center, the North Tower. And the building number 4 got destroyed at the time of the South Tower, right? And buildings 5 and 6 had huge holes blown through them at some point leading up to the time when the North Tower came down. And building 7 happened later in that day.
And building 7 housed a lot of gold, didn't it?
It wasn't building 7, it was other buildings, but were... But within the World Trade Center complex, a number of government agencies, non-government agencies, gold repositories, all sorts of things were there. And there are stories about gold and other treasures being removed prior to the event. In terms of foreknowledge, there's also the fact that American Airlines and United Airlines stocks shorted. That is, people might have had some awareness that something was going to happen and knew the price of those stocks was likely to drop, and so they were able to bet against them and make some money on the stock market. That's insider trading.
Yeah.
There's quite an extensive record of all of that material.
Yeah. But I'm going back to these planes hitting the towers because we've covered quite a lot here. Now, these planes, and aluminium planes, crashed into the towers that were steel, had steel structure. And normally, if something aluminium hit something steel, it would crumple up and drop straight down as opposed to going in. Now, then you had big fires started in Building 1 and 2 where the alleged planes had gone, but there were also explosions that were heard.
There's multiple explosions heard during the incidents at the time of the plane strikes, subsequent to those, and prior to the collapse of the buildings. There's also, like, if one's looking at the videos of the actual tower collapses, there's an obvious rumble about 12 seconds prior to the initiation of each collapse, and that could be a huge explosion under the ground, underneath each of those towers, which initiated the fatal collapse.
Is it possible that perhaps explosives were built into those towers when they were built so that eventually when they had to be destroyed, they could be triggered by explosions?
There's a fair amount of speculation about demolition plans. Okay, so if you build a large building, you need a permit in order to erect it, but you also need to be able to describe how that building's going to be dismantled so that the authorities have some surety that they'll be able to get rid of the thing once it's passed its useful life. There is some speculation or some reason to believe that in order to get the permits to build the World Trade Center Towers 1 and 2 and subsequently Building 7, that a demolition plan needed to be provided to the New York authorities. And that demolition plan, as we understand it, provides for the nuclear demolition of those towers, right, which is quite a radical way of doing things. But when the towers were built, which was the 1960s and they were commissioned in early 1970s, nuclear power was still, or nuclear devices were still being viewed as, you know, like a good way to do engineering. The US and the Russians were both experimenting with using nuclear devices to create dams, underground cavities that could be utilized for whatever they wanted to put inside an underground cavity. But the thing with any nuclear explosion is that they don't send scientists or anyone to go to the cavity that's been created until the worst of the radioactivity has diminished, and that's generally several years before they'd go anywhere near it. the employment of nuclear devices to create lakes is problematic because, unfortunately, the water in the lake that's created becomes very radioactive from the radioactive waste from the nuclear device. So it's quite limited what one can do safely with a nuclear device.
So what you're actually implying is that there were explosives in these buildings that were actually mini nuclear devices that then took the Trade Center down, which would explain why there were such massive clouds of dust which affected all of the people that were living in that area and caused a lot of illness afterwards.
Well, let's just clarify it. I'm suggesting that there were nuclear devices because the US Geological Survey undertook an assessment of the dust a few days after the event, and they produced a report on the World Trade Center dust, which is still available on their website. And that indicates a number of radionuclides, strontium, etc., that were present in the dust in fairly high levels, which of itself may not mean too much, but the level of them does suggest that there were nuclear devices that were exploded.
And that, hence when I said ground zero.
So we've got that piece of evidence. The other piece of evidence we've got is that there's a huge register of people that are ill as a result of being first responders, that is, rushed into the buildings or were working as, like police or fire people on the day.
Those that weren't killed.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Or people that worked on the clean-up, which lasted for about 6 or 8 months after the 9/11 event. So they're called Ground Zero workers, and there were tens of thousands of those. And then people that lived in and worked around the lower Manhattan area where the World Trade Center towers were. Now, there's something like 72,000 people that are on a register for potential injuries as a result of exposure to the 9/11 dust, etc. There's over 5,400 people as of maybe 2015 that are being diagnosed with cancer. There's many hundreds, if not thousands, of people that have now died with various cancers or respiratory ailments or other illnesses that might be associated with the 9/11 event, the dust, or any fallout that came from it.
That is pretty shattering. I'm Lisa Eyre, and this is Green Planet FM, and I'm interviewing Greg Jeshnevetsky on the story of 9/11. Maybe there's different stories from the official one that you have heard. Well, I'm sure not just maybe, Greg. There's a lot more to say about it.
Yeah, there is. Of course, in all of this, anyone who's looking at it can only know that which they've gained through their researches. So it's like going in down Alice's rabbit hole and having a look for the Mad Hatter.
There are many groups like engineers for the 9/11 truth, architects and pilots.
Yep.
There's quite a few people asking questions.
Military officers for 9/11 truth, including military officers that were in the Pentagon at the time of the strike. So there's a particular military officer called Karen Witalski who says there was no plane. She was there.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yes, there's questions, there's whispers, there's what is the truth?
Yeah, well, that's always difficult. We obviously can't rely on the governments telling us what the truth is because they're not. I've asked the New Zealand government formally for what they know about 9/11. Do they know of anything that's occurred that's contrary to the official 9/11 Commission report? And also, what's the reason we went to... I've even asked the Defence Forces, what's the reason we went to Afghanistan? And the Defence Forces don't know why we went to Afghanistan in their official story.
And, of course, the whole thing overflowed into Iraq as well, didn't it? Because I remember seeing people in the Navy, and they'd written, this is for 9/11, on these missiles as they were sending them off to Iraq. So it didn't just affect Afghanistan, it affected Iraq too.
Afghanistan, Pakistan, Iraq, all the Near East. Everything that's going on, right, in the post 9/11 wars in the Near East is related to the 9/11 event. And so, it's all part of the same hysteria about Muslim terrorism.
Yes.
So, and I mean, like, if anyone came to New Zealand and started bombing, as they did to Iraq, Baghdad in March 2003, just bombing the shit out of Auckland, right, I'm sure there'd be quite a reaction from New Zealanders. And if a invading force came in from overseas, I'm sure that there'd be a lot of weekend warriors that are running around trying to undo or to fight in a guerrilla fashion against the invading force.
Well, a guerrilla fashion is the only way they can.
Yeah, I know. It's asymmetrical warfare. If you've got this huge, you know, overly strong force coming in, you can't confront it, like, line up on the battlefield. The best way to do it is to fight it in an asymmetrical and in a fashion which we might call guerrilla warfare. And that's what the people in Iraq, Afghanistan, Pakistan, Libya, etc., Syria, they find themselves when they're up against like a first class army, they have to find other methods of dealing to it.
Yes, and Palestine, but that's a different story. So the difference between the official story of 9/11 and what happened, can we just go through those points?
Okay, so the official story of 9/11, the 9/11 Commission, takes us through an extensive amount of the narrative or the evidence of what might have happened with hijackings and planes. It refuses to take any of the evidence of the firemen or anyone else in respect to explosions and what they observed. So it didn't take any of their evidence. It didn't deal with the... And recall that the 9/11 Commission report wasn't developed until finalised until 2004. Didn't deal at all with Building 7 or the destruction of the other buildings on the World Trade Center Plaza. So you got two planes smashed two buildings, apparently, but that actually caused the destruction of seven buildings, right? And another 40 buildings around the New York area in that Lower Manhattan area had some damage to it, including several buildings that were destroyed afterwards because the owners of the buildings didn't want the liability of their World Trade Center dust that got into their buildings.
Oh, interesting.
You know, like, we don't want that. We, like, workers wouldn't have gone in there. You know,
yes.
You know, because whatever was in there was just too toxic, yes, right, to place anyone else in it.
Yes.
But they allowed the Ground Zero workers to go and do the cleanup without any proper respiratory devices or protective clothing or any sort of explanation as to any of the, if you like, the more esoteric dangers or toxicities that they would encounter.
So the first thing is, two planes were supposed to have hit, okay, seven buildings
came
down.
More than seven, destroyed more than seven buildings.
Yes. Okay, the next point.
If you go to the Pentagon, right, mm-hmm, it's supposed to be in a plane, but there's no plane bits.
Right.
Okay. The other one is Flight 93. The official story is a plane crashed into Point X, right, there's a hole in the ground, no plane bits.
Yep.
But there are plane bits spread out of a much larger area further away, including across a lake. Okay? So for all of those, for the plane bits to be in bits spread out, including across a lake, means that the plane had to be destroyed in midair.
Right.
Okay? They're not accepting, or they're not telling us that in the official story.
In the official story, it went down where there's been an explosion in the ground.
Point X.
Right.
But there's no plane bits there. If you also, like, the technologies in respect to cell phones back at that point in time, the best that you'd be able to get a cell phone message from a plane would be at about 4,000, 5,000, 6,000 feet, not at 30,000 feet. So cell phones didn't have the capability to reach 30,000 feet at that point in time.
So that's relevant because people are sending texts?
So apparently there was cell phone communications which are reported right, as saying so-and-so rang their loved ones or whatever else, and this is the end. And all of these are faithfully replicated as testimony to the fact that there was hijackings of planes and, you know, supporting or corroborating evidence. Excepting people have done the tests and cell phones didn't work at that height.
Right.
Okay, so the, I mean, like, so there's whatever the narrative is, but there's also the science.
Yes.
Now, one of the problems we've got is the if as what I'm saying is correct, right, and we're being lied to on a massive scale, then the conspiracy to pull off the event is huge.
Absolutely.
You know, because, like, they had to generate the false cell phone calls. They had to do all sorts of things in order to make the thing happen.
Well, now, the BBC might have been complicit, couldn't it?
Okay, so there were a number of media reports, not just the BBC, but others, which were broadcast ahead of the collapse of Building 7 at 5:20 in the afternoon. But the most, if you like, prolifically reported one is a BBC report by a reporter by the name of Jane Stanley, which occurred about a half an hour before the World Trade Center tower collapsed. And that was beamed into the homes of the British viewers by the BBC, indicating that the building was had collapsed.
And
well,
it hadn't.
Well, no, because you could see the World Trade Center 7 tower was still in the shot behind Jane Stanley when she was actually talking about it.
So something went wrong there?
Well, like, someone knew it was going to collapse and that information was imparted to her, and so, and she reported that, but it hadn't collapsed at that point in time. So we've got a discrepancy of at least half an hour. And we also know that there's another story around Larry Silverstein, the leasehold owner of the World Trade Center site. He's videoed talking about Building 7 and pulling the building, right, which is a demolisher's term for controlled demolition when they actually pull the pin and the building goes down. So he's talking about how there's been a lot of loss of life on the day and there was fires on Building 7, which had gone out by then.
Yes.
Right? The building's still standing up, but nevertheless they decide at 5:20 in the afternoon that the building needs to be pulled.
Right.
Well, you know, this is a long time after the plane events and all the rest of it. You've got a building that's standing. Sure, there's been some fires in it, but the frame of the building's still there. It's standing, right, and then all of a sudden it comes down after Jane Stanley has said it's going to come down, you know, half an hour earlier, and after Larry Silverstein saying we're pulling it. And, you know, like, so then anyone that might have been in the building was told to move away, the police moved away, the fire people moved away, and all of a sudden the building comes down and it looks like a controlled demolition, right? It looks similar but not exactly the same as the other larger towers, right? So Building 7 was 47 stories, whereas the World Trade Center Towers 1 and 2 were 110 stories each. Okay, so Building 7's about 170 or 80 metres, whereas the others are 440 metres. Now, the cloud that went up, the dust cloud, etc., that went up from Building 7 was 1,300 metres tall. It looked like a mushroom cloud.
Wow.
But they didn't show you that in the TV shots.
No, but there's videos from people.
Yeah, other material. And see, this is the thing. I got blasted and everyone else in the world got blasted with shots of plane flying into the second tower repeatedly, and then the destruction of the buildings. So the focus was planes and then the destruction of the buildings.
Yes.
You didn't learn anything else about what had happened. They just plane, like repeatedly, shots of the plane flying into the building and then the destruction of the towers.
I remember it vividly.
Yeah, everyone remembers it. But they didn't get shown all that other stuff.
Yes.
right? You don't recall all the, because there was even speculation as to whether it was Flight 77 or 175 that actually went into the second tower.
Yes. So, I mean, people listening to this, they're going to say, well, Greg, why would a group of people do this? What is the motive?
$6 trillion. The war economy. Control.
So the industrial military machine.
Well, if the world's heading towards reapproachment and heading towards a more peaceful state, the opportunities to make profit from war or to control populations, right, is limited. And you've got to remember that immediately after the 9/11 event, as well as the waging of war, there was also a number of pieces of legislation put in place to control and monitor the domestic population. Okay, so the Patriot Act was put in place straight away.
That was already drafted and...
So we believe.
Yes.
Right? Which, again... If the legislation was already in draft form and sitting there, then it speaks to looking for an opportunity to put that legislation in place. So the drafters or the people that are initiating the drafting of the legislation wanted to be able to put the Patriot Act in place. 9/11 then gave them the opportunity.
So can you tell us a little bit about the Patriot Act, briefly?
Right. Well, it's an act which authorised the rolling back of a number of civil freedoms and entrenched the homeland security apparatus and spying on people, warrantless spying, and probably legitimised mass spying. Right.
So it would have included New Zealand by.
No. It was a US act.
No, so the fact that happened there didn't affect us here?
No, there'd have to be... Well, it would have affected, like, in terms of our linkage through Five Eyes and all the rest of it, but legislatively it wouldn't have impacted us.
Right.
But we were then rolled in, and as a result of that, there was a number of legislative changes in New Zealand and others. So there was a terrorism act that were put in place here in New Zealand.
Right.
And then more recently, there's a Maritime Crimes Amendment Bill. There was the Countering Foreign Terrorist Fighters Legislation Bill in 2014 and other things going back close to the 9/11 event.
Right.
And also part of the Patriot Act was also stuff in relationship to passports, and they had to be machine readable. And because the US then required all passports to be machine readable, then we had to have machine readable passports here in New Zealand for people to get into the US. So there's all of those sorts of implications.
Right.
That flow from it. In some sense, irrespective of what one might believe about the 9/11 event or otherwise, one can view world history as like a timeline which then went and was constrained, like an eggshell timer, like through the 9/11 event, and then all history in the world after that flows from that 9/11 event.
Right.
The 9/11 event has actually launched the Third World War, and it's a total war across the whole planet, and the war is against something called terrorism.
Yes.
Right, so terrorism isn't a state. Terrorism is just something that someone does to oppress another person or to get a particular result or whatever else. And, I mean, even now, anyone who is a dissident against the state, right, irrespective of how justified or otherwise they might be, they're often, like, roped into the general umbrella of being a terrorist or a potential terrorist.
So it really has created this fear, hasn't it? It's generated a huge amount of fear.
Yeah, okay, so there is... Yeah, the world is run on fear now, very much, but it's up to the individual about how they respond or whether they live in fear or otherwise. Like that. Like, it's important to move out of that and not live in fear.
So if we accept... If we accept that... The 9/11 was, in fact, a false flag. if we're accepting that and we're saying that it was done so that the military could continue wars around the world...
I'm not saying it's done by the military, okay? I'm not saying in particular that it was done by the official government, but there are interests that intersect.
Yes.
Right? So people, like even in New Zealand, let's just go have a look at New Zealand, the New Zealand state. The New Zealand state is like the government, the public service, they're all of the business interests, the civil interests, like there's lots of different interests, right? And they're all pushing and shoving and the whole thing's mediated through the government, okay? Now, in the US, it's like nearly 100 times bigger, like yes. In terms of population and all everything else. And the US is central to the world and what goes on. So there's a deep interest, anyone who wants to control the world, to control what happens in the US. And so those interests, whoever they are, place themselves so that they are in controlling positions, okay? And one has to look at the 9/11 event as an event which individuals and interests organized in order to create a particular outcome.
Yes.
Okay? So saying it was just the military or just the government is not nuanced enough as to what it is.
And many people have actually said it was Mossad.
Okay, so Israelis have got their fingerprints all over it, but there'd be lots of other people as well.
Right.
Okay?
Yep.
There may be people who were Mossad operatives that were involved, but it's also people that were involved in various intelligence and security and military companies that also were involved as well. So if people wanted to look at a book by a US researcher and journalist by the name of Christopher Bolan,
yes.
One could look at his book, which is the title is Solving 9/11. Right, and he goes through and details systematically all of those different connections between the intelligence and security and then tie them back to particular personnel who happen to be Jewish. Okay, so one can see that there is Israeli and Mossad fingerprints all over it. Okay, but they're also like one also has to like for the cover-up that took place in the US, there has to be US military, FBI, CIA personnel also involved. But it's not to say that everyone in the government is involved.
Yes, yes. Okay? No, I realise that.
And it's not to say that the government is officially involved.
Yes.
It's to more to see that the government is being punked, tricked, right? Now, it may be a lot of people that were happy that they got tricked, because they might be part of the feeding frenzy that's feeding on the $6 trillion bonus from the, you know, the all the military expenditure while we've gone and bombed Afghanistan, Pakistan, Iraq, Syria, Libya, the Sudan.
All of those areas, right? Yes.
So all of this activity has flowed from the 9/11 event and from the fact that we've created the Islamic terrorist problem because we've gone and smashed their places, and where they've wanted to resist the American or the UK US empire in its war fighting in their nations, they've set up guerrilla opposition groups which have then been pushed out and spread and dispersed into other areas.
Yes, as particularly evident in Syria.
Yeah.
So that
reaction is called blowback.
Right. Yeah. Well, now, very, very briefly, Greg, if people really understand this, and there's heaps on the internet that you can look at that would support what Greg is saying, if you really understand this, that this was a false flag and so many people worldwide have died because of it, what can we do about it?
I've been attempting on a number of levels to do things about it. Like, so first is to find out what the New Zealand government actually knows about it. So I've asked OIA questions.
And that's Official Information.
Official Information Act. Mm-hmm. And I'm getting unsatisfactory results. So now I'm pursuing that through the Ombudsman's Office. As well as that, I've put evidence that I'm aware of into various key pieces of legislation, including the Countering Terrorist Fighters Legislation Bill back in 2014, the Maritime Crimes Bill last year, earlier this year in respect to the Security and Intelligence Bill, like placing evidence before the government about what they're involved with in their alliance with the US and the UK in terms of what it does, right? And just recently we found out the New Zealand government's been spying on behalf of the Americans, right, looking at Donald Trump's connections to the Russians.
Right.
Right, so we're involving ourselves in other people's domestic politics.
Yes, yes.
Right?
Yes, we should be keeping ourselves separate. So, Greg, I would recommend to all listeners that you really get this conversation going, because if we realise that it was a false flag and the results of that, can we really ever trust any official stories again? So, Greg, thank you so much for coming in today, and all the very best as you continue with trying to wake people up on this story.
Well, I'm attempting to wake myself up, so I'm digging deeper and deeper and deeper in order to comprehend it. And thank you very much for the opportunity, and have a lovely day, people.
Thank you. That was me, Lisa Eyre, interviewing Greg Jeshnevetsky, who was refreshing your memory about what really happened on 9/11 and about the huge inconsistencies in the official story and the reason he considers it to be a false flag. This interview was sponsored by the Awareness Party. You've just been listening to Green Planet on Planet FM. Join us at the same time next week, 8 a.m. Thursdays, or anytime online at greenplanetfm.com.
I invite you to be able to come to greenplanetfm.com, where we have over 400 interviews in our database, which you can readily download and listen to be able to inspire yourself to become the change you want to see in the world. And become involved in caring for your children and grandchildren's future. We are also on Facebook, on Green Planet FM, and ourplanet.org. Please come and love us. This is Tim Lynch.
And or Lisa Eyre.
And Liz Gunn.
In the spirit of Aroha, wishing you a wonderful week. We look forward to being with you next week. I say kia kaha and haere ura.